We're discussing the Kyle Rittenhouse trial as it gets closer to wrapping up. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Rittenhouse spent most of the day Wednesday on the stand giving his account of what happened that night in August 2020 when he shot and killed two people, wounded a third during the unrest in Kenosha following the police shooting of Jacob Blake. Rittenhouse says it was self-defense, sobbing hard at one point where presiding judge Bruce Schrader called a recess.
And there were there were three people right there.
Are you following the trial? How do you feel about the testimony and what's transpired? 800-642-1234. Julie Bozeman is Chicago bureau chief for the New York Times, a native of Kenosha, covering the trial. Julie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Well, start us out with some scene setting, if you would. Give us a sense of what the mood is like in the courtroom, what you're seeing around you.
So I came to Kenosha not really knowing what the atmosphere of this trial would be like. Obviously, 14 months ago, Kenosha was roiled by protests, by riots, by destruction. So it seemed like this trial might attract a lot of that same attention. But I was surprised to find that the atmosphere in the courtroom and at the courthouse and even in downtown Kenosha has been pretty tranquil so far. I think that there have been only a few protesters who have stood on the courthouse steps every day, including Justin Blake, who's an uncle of Jacob Blake. And inside the courtroom of Judge Schrader, there have been days when the courtroom seems only half full. There aren't really many members of the community who have wanted to come out and watch this in person. But there have certainly been many moments of conflict and drama and really compelling testimony, not just from Kyle Rittenhouse, but from many of the people who were there that night. We heard from Gage Grosskreutz, who is the third person that Rittenhouse shot. And of course, he survived with a gunshot wound to his right arm. We've heard from family members of the people who were shot, friends. We heard from Anthony Huber's aunt, who testified about, their relationship and the things that he loved doing in life. And we've heard from some of the people who accompanied Kyle Rittenhouse that night, people who lived in Kenosha, people who lived in West Bend and came down to the city to, bring their firearms and try to defend property from further destruction.
What are some of your observations of the jury at this point?
So the jury to me, Wisconsin's process for picking juries, this one happened particularly quickly. Jury mm-hmm. selection happened in only one day, which was pretty striking. There are 20 members of the jury when we began, and only 12 of those people will eventually deliberate and come to a verdict. Two of those jurors have already been excused, one of them for making a joke about Jacob Blake to a sheriff's deputy. And that juror was told that that was extremely bad judgment and that he would be excused from the jury because it suggested a racial bias, as the prosecutor said. Another juror was dismissed for medical reasons. So we're left with 18 people on this jury. They're an overwhelmingly white jury. There's one person of color on the jury. To me, it looks like a jury that, leans perhaps a little older, middle-aged to older, but the jury throughout the testimony so far for, almost 2 weeks of testimony, they have been watching very intently as the witnesses have taken the stand. They have, sat with clipboards on their laps with notebooks and pens and at times taken, very, very careful notes. They seem very engaged. But I will say yesterday when the judge announced that they were getting a 3-day weekend, we saw some big smiles from people on the jury because I'm sure it's a grueling process for them.
Judge Schrader said earlier this week it would be ideal to wrap it up early next week. We're at day 9. Where do things stand in the trial?
You know, it feels like this trial has gone very, very quickly. You know, with other high profile murder trials, you know, they've like we've seen in the Arbery case in Georgia, the Derek Chauvin trial earlier this year in Minneapolis. You know, it's been a much longer process. This trial has gone relatively quickly. So where we are now is testimony is concluded. The prosecution and the defense have both rested. So what's going to happen today is the jury has, you know, been told they don't have to come in. The lawyers and Judge Schrader will go over jury instructions and kind of hammer out some slightly complicated details of what the jury will be told on Monday. One of the things that came up yesterday is that the state informed the judge that they intended to ask the jury to be informed on lesser charges, which essentially means that some of the more serious charges that the state has brought against Kyle Rittenhouse, including first degree intentional homicide, the jury might be given another option to consider, which could be reckless homicide. It could be something even lesser. So I think the jury, when they come back on Monday, they will hear closing arguments from both sides, which will be limited to 2.5 hours from each side. And then the jury will begin to deliberate and they'll have a pretty complicated process. You know, they have 6 different charges to consider. And now that they know that there will be lesser charges to consider on at least a couple of those charges, I think that these deliberations could be very complex.
We have Julie Bozeman with us, Chicago bureau chief for the New York Times, been covering the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, native of Kenosha. Gathering your thoughts on the trial at 800-642-1234. Bringing in Andrew now in Dousman. Andrew, hi, what are your thoughts?
Hi, so I just was thinking that the media from the beginning of the whole thing was that they were dishonest. They were dishonest about what happened with Jacob Blake and why the police were actually called to that apartment complex. They were dishonest about him having a knife and fighting the police and the fact that it was a domestic abuse call that they were on. And then riots followed after that. And MSNBC just the other day was trying to claim that Kyle Rittenhouse shot Gage Grosskreutz when he had his hands up, despite Gage himself admitting on the stand, "I only was shot after I aimed my gun at Kyle Rittenhouse." And it's just dishonesty after dishonesty. And I hope people will go and listen to the trial itself and hear the testimony rather than taking it, you know, from a third source, being the media.
Andrew, thank you. And Andrew there being very disappointed in how the media have covered this trial, Julie.
Well, thanks for the comment, Andrew. You know, one thing that has struck me throughout covering this case is that from the very beginning, Americans were reacting to a very short video clip that I'm sure we've all watched, the clip of a Kenosha police officer shooting Jacob Blake. And obviously when you see a video clip that's taken on a cell phone, and I think it was, you know, less than 30 seconds, a lot of Americans, whether they're, you know, conservative or liberal, responded to that clip with horror and wondering what had happened. I think that what we know now is that the situation was obviously more complex than a very short video clip would have suggested. And I know that reporters have worked hard to get all those details out as they've come, but I agree that people should watch this trial, if they are following this case, I think there is nothing like watching our justice system in action and watching the raw testimony from the courtroom.
The New York Times' Julie Bozeman covering the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, day 9, charged with intentional homicide for killing 2 men during protests and civil unrest in August last year. We'll pick this up back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing developments in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The judge presiding over Rittenhouse's trial this week, Judge Bruce Schrader, sent the jury out of the room and chastised the prosecutor cross-examining Rittenhouse for a line of questioning.
Don't get brazen with me. You knew very well, that an attorney can't go into these types of areas when the judge has already ruled without asking outside the presence of the jury to do so. So don't give me that.
Rittenhouse faces multiple charges, including first-degree intentional homicide. We have the New York Times' Chicago bureau chief and Kenosha native Julie Bozeman covering it. Stays with us. Let's bring on another caller. Now, Lee joining us from Williams Bay. Hi, Lee. What would you like to bring up?
Oh, hi. I'm glad you just brought up Judge Schrader, because I do believe he's very biased. And I just have 3 quick points. Yesterday, he called for applause from the entire courtroom for a vet who was testifying for the defense. I find that highly prejudicial.
Veteran.
And then not allowing the word victim to be used for these 2 people who were murdered. And then you just shared the clip where he excoriates the prosecutor. And he's done that several times. You just played 1 clip. And that's pretty much it. I'm just really disgusted with Judge Schrader. And I think he should be allowed to step down off the bench.
Lee, thanks. Julie, this is the longest serving state trial court judge in Wisconsin. How has he conducted himself in this trial?
Well, I think that some of the things that have gotten a lot of media attention, such as, you know, Judge Schrader's rule on the word victims, and, you know, as the caller said, Judge Schrader said that the word victims could not be used to apply to Anthony Huber, Joseph Rosenbaum, and Gage Grosskreutz, who were shot by Kyle Rittenhouse. The thing that I think was lost in a lot of the coverage of that rule is that this was not specific to the Rittenhouse trial. This is a longstanding practice of Judge Schrader's. And there's a reason behind it. And the reason is, you know, the judge feels that the word victims is loaded. In a case like this that is based on a self-defense argument from the Rittenhouse side, you know, the word victims could perhaps like color the jury's feelings about the people who were shot. So the judge, as he has done in previous cases similar to this, just said, look, my rule is that, you know, we use a different word to describe them. We call them the deceased or the decedents, or, you know, the individuals who were shot, because, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse is on trial for murder, and his argument, which the jury will decide whether it's valid, is that those people were attacking him and those people made him fear for his life. So I think that that is a little bit of what was lost there. But, you know, it isn't often that Americans tune in to a murder trial on TV or on, you know, on court TV where they're watching it live streamed. And I think, you know, this judge has, he is 75 years old. He's been on the bench for many decades. And I think the way that he runs his courtroom is not especially specific to the Rittenhouse trial.
Let's bring on Steve now in Madison. Steve, hi.
Good morning. I haven't been following it closely, but the videos do show shots of the reactions of the mother sitting in the audience. And you know, she's not on trial, but has there been any mention of her role in driving a 17-year-old boy armed with an AR-15 from Illinois up to Kenosha? And will she receive any kind of charges for that behavior?
Steve, thanks. The role of Kyle Rittenhouse's mother, Julie.
Kyle Rittenhouse's mother, Wendy Rittenhouse, I think there have been a few common misconceptions about her role in this. I believe that Kyle Rittenhouse drove himself from Illinois to Wisconsin. He had come to Kenosha the day before the shootings. He had just taken a new job as a part-time lifeguard at the RecPlex in Pleasant Prairie, which is a recreational facility. And he was staying with a friend of his, Dominic Black, who was dating Kyle Rittenhouse's older sister. So I believe at the time of the shootings, Kyle Rittenhouse's mother was working a long shift. She worked as a nursing assistant, and she had called her son that night just before the shootings happened, asked him what he was doing. He said that he was out on the streets providing medical aid, and the shootings happened just a very short time later. But I think that he was 17 years old when this happened. I think that a lot of people have questioned the roles of the adults in his life. I think that people have looked at Dominic Black, who purchased the semi-automatic rifle for him, which was illegal for a 17-year-old to purchase. So his friend purchased it for him. That gun was kept in a safe at the stepfather of Dominic Black's home. That gun was removed from the safe and given to Kyle Rittenhouse at some point. So I think that there's certainly a lot of questions about the people who enabled some of the steps leading up to this shooting.
Julie Bosman with us, Chicago bureau chief for the New York Times, covering the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. Gathering your thoughts along the way, 800-642-1234. Mike is with us from Shell Lake. Mike, what are your observations?
Well, one, I want to say he shouldn't have been there, period. He should not have been there. They shouldn't have had the gun. That's illegal. There's no getting around that. None of that should have happened. But as a person that carries a gun every day and has taken 5 classes, what he did was self-defense. There's no getting out of that. It was absolute. And he also shot until the threat was done and didn't carry on any further. For anybody to say that this wasn't self-defense is clearly not educated and has taken a bias, because that's exactly what it was. And that's all I have to say.
Mike, thank you. So Mike, laying it out there, Julie, and really getting to the point of what prosecutors are saying, that Rittenhouse came armed with a semi-automatic rifle that was, he was not legally permitted to possess. And on the other side, Rittenhouse saying, look, I'm pleading self-defense.
Yeah, I think what Mike said is something that I've heard from a lot of people here in Kenosha, that, they are outraged by the idea of a 17-year-old carrying a rifle like that and, patrolling a city street. I think a lot of people have said, that is not the kind of scene that they think is safe, appropriate. Obviously he was not allowed to buy that gun. I do think that the self-defense argument is a slightly separate one. The prosecutors in this case have tried to point out all those things, like that he shouldn't have been there, that they've called him a chaos tourist. They've said that he, should have been home at his home in Antioch that night. He shouldn't have been in Kenosha, which was a community that he did not live in. But I do think that that doesn't exactly touch the central argument here in this case, that Kyle Rittenhouse is saying that, once he was there, that, he was being chased by a man who was behaving aggressively, erratically, had, previously that night had threatened to kill him if he got him alone, that Rittenhouse tried to retreat and run away from him. And another witness who was standing right next to him right before he shot said that Joseph Rosenbaum, the first man who was shot, was actually reaching for the gun and had tried to grab the barrel of the rifle. So I do think that even if the jury is convinced by the prosecution that Rittenhouse shouldn't have been there that night, they may not be convinced that he did not act in self-defense.
Julie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Julie Bosman is Chicago Bureau Chief for the New York Times, native of Kenosha, been covering the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. Ahead this hour, we discuss what the massive federal infrastructure package could mean for Wisconsin public works projects. What would you want fixed, upgraded, and prioritized with this potential infusion of federal dollars? It's 800-642-1234. Let's talk about it.